Is anyone not here? Please say if you're not here. Okay, we can start now then on this talk on a Monday morning. And for those of you who haven't got enough happiness yet, just remember this is Monday morning and you don't have to go to work. You don't have to do anything. Woohoo! So at least that should give you some joy. You can just have a nice day meditating and relaxing and doing very little. But the problem is, again, a lot of people like doing things, and because that's all they really know in their life. So it is a very great difficulty learning how to meditate because of our old habits of always trying to do something, to make something, to get somewhere. And you know, you have to recognize that it takes a long time for a person to get used to actually doing nothing, just to being peaceful. And in order to help you on that, the best way already is what I've said so far about learning how just to make peace, be kind, be gentle, learning how to let go, to put the mind down, not to interfere with it, just to let it go. But you find it so difficult to do because before you know it, you're interfering with it again. Thinking, fantasizing, planning, getting depressed, getting anxious, whatever it is, anything in order to occupy yourself. And a lot of times it's because we're afraid of silence. So little by little we have to get a person used to the idea of silence, of stillness, and also to get them to recognize the beauty of stillness. It takes a while, but after a time, you enjoy silence and stillness so much. It's such a delightful place to stay that, as the Buddha said, as soon as a little bit of stillness comes, your mind leaps towards it. In the same way that if you have a dog and you're about to take it for a walk, as soon as you get hold of the leash, the dog starts wagging its tail. Yeah, I'm going for a walk. In the same way your mind wags its tail as soon as you start to meditate. I'm going to have some peace now, some calm. It's a very delightful place to stay. And of course, the more you get into that stillness, the happier it does become. Now, I mentioned this in brief after one of the questions. And yesterday I was talking about how stillness allows things to disappear. But I never really emphasize how stillness is the cause of great happiness. Literally because the mind has two parts to it. What we call the active mind, which is always doing things, always planning, always thinking, always reacting to what's happening. Instead of just listening, instead of just sitting, instead of just watching the nice view, we tend to want to do something with it. And that doer, active or reactive mind, is so strong in our modern society that we are very, very competent at planning, arranging, managing, thinking, giving our opinions. We're excellent on that, but we never learn how to be still and learning how not to do anything. It's an amazing thing. We have this beautiful retreat center, and you don't have to do anything at all. But of course, we want to do things. And it's interesting just how all the duties you have, maybe when you first came here, you thought, oh, I don't want to do all those duties, I don't want to meditate. But this time of the retreat, you'd be very happy if someone gave you some more duties, something more to do. Many of you volunteered to do some extra. Give me something to do. And really, the reason is because we're not so comfortable with doing nothing. But on this retreat, little by little, we're going to restrict you so you can't do very much. And we're going to encourage you to take all the energy away from that active part of the mind. So it all goes to the second part of the mind, which I have described, which is just the knowing, the awareness, the mindfulness. That is the passive part of the mind, which just knows without doing anything about it. Which can sit in the car on a journey, just look through the window and enjoy the view without telling the driver which way to go. We can just enjoy the journey. It's totally passive. not reacting at all. Now what happens is that passive mind hardly gets any of your energy. Your mental energy is all used up doing, thinking, struggling. Which means the mindfulness is very, very weak. It only gets the remnants, what's left over of your mental energy. And that's one of the reasons nearly everybody in our modern world is tired. I did a teaching tour in Kuala Lumpur 2 or 3 years ago. As part of that program, I spent a day just doing a youth seminar. And I will never forget when one of the people asked the youth, which was about 15 to 25, what is their biggest emotional problem? And you may have all sorts of ideas what the answer would be. But the clear winner, the biggest emotional problem for 15 to 25 year olds in Kuala Lumpur was tiredness. And it sort of, first of all, it shocked me. I thought, yes, exactly. Because they're working so hard. You know, both in their studies, in their young careers, in their social life, in just everything is just tiring them out. Because they're going at such a strong pace. And if I ask everyone else here, that also is one of the biggest emotional problems, the causes for many diseases, both mental and physical, tiredness. Which means that a lot of you are very dull. Your mental energy is all being used up in doing things, and you've hardly got anything left for knowing. And on this retreat, you will find, because there's nothing much to do, and the meditation is all encouraging you just to leave things alone, let it go. You will find after a while, the energy which was wasted on doing things and fighting battles is now freed to go into the passive part of the mind, which just knows, which is just aware, without reacting. And because that receives more energy, you literally do wake up. You see more, you feel more, you become more sensitive. You can appreciate the view or the stars at night or the sunset. You've got more energy in the mind to actually to see it. And this is where you start to see the beauty of life again. The opposite is some people get so tired, so worn out, they fight so many battles, they're exhausted. They've hardly got any energy at all left in knowing. And that is called depression. If any of you have ever experienced depression or talked to people who have depression, nothing tastes good. It's all bland. And no colours excite you. Everything is like pastel. Life is washed out of any colour, any vibrancy, any life. Everything is dull. And one of the reasons is because you've got no mental energy left. And one of the great ways of overcoming such depression is stopping fighting it, just being still, letting it be, so that you can open up the channels of energy to go into the knowing rather than always reacting and fighting. And little by little you just wake up. Food starts to taste delicious again. And the colours start to become rich again. Life is more oomph to it. Which means it's also happier. It was a strange thing as my journey in meditation to realise just as I become more still, everything starts to become more visible, easier to see, more tasty, everything becomes more alive, and with that everything becomes more beautiful and I become more happy. Until you realize that it is from stillness you get this mental energy which is called inner happiness. You are bright, alive, happy, energized. So after a while you appreciate stillness as the cause for inner happiness. let alone trying to find out the meaning of life. It just feels good to be still. You get more alive, more happy, easier to smile, easier to laugh. Please notice that as this retreat goes on, your happiness increases. And this is what happens when we're still. But of course, once you get to know this, it's so easy just to let go because you realize this is a happy way to spend a week. But unfortunately, until you've experienced that for yourself, until the mind recognizes the power of stillness, you do need a little help on the journey. So we're trying not to get you to do too much, but to give you a little bit of doing to do, just to satisfy this crazy mind of yours. And it's just like what we call a skillful means, to throw the dog a bone, to give you something to do. Otherwise, some of you go crazy. So what we have for you to do is to do a little bit of breath meditation, which I wanted to talk about this morning. Usually, many of you don't even need to do breath meditation. The breath will come to you in due course when you're still and quiet, just letting go. Soon the breath comes up by itself. But for those of you who can't manage that, you can invite the breath in when you start meditating. You sit down, you get your body nice and comfortable, and then you invite the breath in. And what you do is just, you know, am I breathing in or am I breathing out? The breath meditation has been taught so much in Buddhism that many people get confused about all the different ways of watching the breath. Or more importantly, where you should watch the breath. And it was, in my own journey of meditation, it was so confusing for me. Because I started meditation by being asked to watch the breath at the tip of the nose. Which was wonderful, except when you got hay fever. And for a lot of the year, I said, I can't watch the breath at the tip of the nose because my nose is all blocked. There's nothing happening there. And then later on, I was told, you don't need to watch at the tip of the nose. You can use the Mahasi Sayadaw method. Watch it at your abdomen, going up, going down. I thought, great, now I can meditate all year round. But when I became a monk, both of those methods were a problem. Especially watching the breath here. And you'll have that problem on this retreat as well. Because if you put your attention here in the evening about 5 or 6 p.m., it is so close to your tummy. Your attention will move from the abdomen to your tummy and it's empty. I'm hungry. I want something to eat. And that's what happened to me in Thailand. I started watching my abdomen. And then I started feeling hungry because, you know, the abdomen and the tummy are just too close together. So it never gave you any peace. Just pangs of hunger. And the problem also with the nose. Even if you don't have a blocked nose from time to time, still watching it at the tip of the nose is so unnatural and it causes people headaches. And for a long time I wondered why people always got headaches when they watched the tip of the nose. And if you haven't seen me do this before, here it comes. You can see it again if you've seen it before. If you watch the tip of the nose, I've taken my glasses off so you can watch my eyeballs, because I'm now going to watch the tip of the nose with my eyelids open. Now I'm just focusing on the tip of my nose, and as I start to focus on the tip of my nose, my eyeballs point to the tip of the nose as well, because whatever you think about or use with your mind, your eyes tend to go there as well. In other words, you get cross-eyed. Okay, when you're meditating on the tip of the nose, you've got your eyelids closed, but if I could peel them open, you'd be doing this too. Cross-eyed. And if you maintain that position for half an hour, you are going to get a headache. And that's all it really is, is eye strain, because what you watch with your mind, you usually watch with your eyes as well. So be careful. Don't watch the breath at the tip of the nose. Don't watch it at the abdomen. You don't have to locate it anywhere on your body. All you need to do is to know the breath is going in or the breath is going out. That's all. And in order to emphasize that, especially to new meditators, I usually tell them, these are people who've never meditated before in their lives, close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times, And after the third out-breath, open your eyes. And everybody manages to do that without any problem whatsoever. And then I ask them, how did you know you were breathing in? How did you know you were breathing out? How did you know there was 3 in-breaths and 3 out-breaths happened? And they don't have to put it in words. Sometimes they struggle to put it in words. But somehow or other, they know they're breathing in. Somehow they know they're breathing out. And that's all the information you require. You don't need to find out where exactly on the body it is located. In fact, it is better that you don't know where on the body it's located. Because as soon as you get into body awareness at this stage, you get all sorts of aches and pains and irritations happen. All you need to know is the breath and nothing else. So when you can understand what the object is, what we mean by watching the breath, this feeling sensation which tells you it's going in or going out, at least that makes it clear. You know what you're supposed to be doing, just watching the breath. And then what happens, this is called in the 3 levels, here we go to stages and levels again, the 3 levels of breath meditation, recognition. You recognize what the heck you're supposed to be doing. And for many people that's a great advance, because sometimes you're taught how to meditate, but you're not really quite sure what you're supposed to be doing. Be watching that thing which tells you the breath is going in or going out. And the next level is where you become familiar with that sensation. Because when you're not familiar with that sensation, you tend to tense up. In the same way, when you first came to Jhana Grove, those of you coming here for the first time, you were very tense because you did not know the place, you did not understand what's happening here, whether it's a good place, a kind place, many of you meeting me for the first time, who is this guy? You're always tense. But after a while, especially those of you who've been here many, many times, this is like a second home. You know the place, you know where everything is. Now you're familiar with Jhana Grove, you're familiar with me, you're familiar with the routine of the retreat. So you tend to relax. You know, when you meet a new person, you're always tensing up. When it's an old friend, you're totally relaxed. It's just called familiarity. So you become familiar with the breath. In other words, you're not tensing up against it, and you're not trying to control it. It's just my breath, that's all. And then you get to the final level, which is at ease with the breath. Recognition, familiarity, and then at ease. And you know you're at ease with the breath when, whether you watch it or you don't watch it, it goes in and out the same. Why is it when we watch something, we tend to interfere with it, and it becomes a problem? And the best example of that is, now please become aware of the saliva in your throat. A minute ago it was not a problem at all. Now it is. Should I swallow, should I not swallow? Isn't it amazing, whenever we're aware of something, we tend to get involved with it so it doesn't flow naturally. Now I've got to go talking about something else for a couple of minutes until you forget the saliva in your throat and you can relax again. This is just the nature of our mind. When we first watch something, we tend to not be at ease with it. We're not familiar with it. So we can't just really relax and just let it be natural. So with the breathing, after a while, we recognize what the feeling is we're supposed to watch. We become familiar with it, and then we're at ease with it. And the sign you're at ease with the breath, as I said, is the breath comes in and out naturally. Whether you're watching it or not watching it, it's just the same. Which is a very comfortable image. So that's what you're supposed to watch, and now you continue watching it go in and go out. Now when I ask people to please close your eyes and watch the breath go in and out 3 times, it's so easy to do. And as a little joke, but also to make a point, I then say, okay, close your eyes, now watch the breath go in and out 3,000 times. And just like many of you smiled, why is it easy to do it 3 times but not 3,000 times? And the reason is because after a while we get bored. We can watch 3 breaths, maybe 10 breaths, but after a while nothing's happening, so the mind goes looking for something else to enjoy. This is one of the problems. So we have to make the breath interesting at first. And in order to make it interesting, there's all sorts of little ways and means which have been developed over the years to make the breath really fascinating. And of course, one way is to, if you are a scientist or an accountant, and there's a few of those here, count the breath. Now, I did maths, so I was really into maths, so I had my own little way of making the breath interesting. And for many of you, you think, yes, this is what I want, because it gives me something to do. It gives me, not just watching the breath, but I've got a task to do and a goal to achieve. And this is when I breathed in, I just counted myself one, breathe out one. In two, out two. In three, out three. In four, out four. Five, five, six, six, seven, seven. In eight. In nine, out nine. Okay, that's up to nine. Now I'm going to start again. In one, out one, two, two, three, three, four, four, five, five, six, six, seven, seven. In eight, out eight. Do you notice how much you're paying attention? Because this is interesting, because it's complicated. Sometimes when it's too simple, you turn off and go to sleep. But this is interesting. And then from one to seven. In one, out one, in two, out two, in three, out three, in four, out four, five, five, six, six, in seven, out seven. One to six, one to five, one to four. In one, out one, in two, out two, in three, out three. In one, out one, in two, out two, in one, out one. One whole cycle. Yes, I've done it. I've done one whole cycle. Straight away that feeds into you wanting to achieve something. It gives you a goal to perform. And, you know, people get interested in things like that. Thank you, Ajahn Brahma. Last you give me something I could do. And if you complete one whole cycle, you have watched 45 breaths. Which is quite a lot. And it means you haven't wandered off anywhere. Now, it also shows just how weak you are sometimes with your mindfulness. Because sometimes when I used to do this, I'd be saying to myself, breathing in 15, out 15, in 16, out 16. You'd just totally forgotten where you were. And I haven't got a clue whether I was on the sixth or the seventh cycle. And if that happened, I was very strict with myself. I had to go right back to the very beginning of the first nine. And then eight, seven, six, start all over again. And no cheating. And because of doing that, I had to be very aware. It gave me something to do, and it was a bit of fun. But please, don't do that for too long. Otherwise, again, you get a headache counting and counting and counting. It's just something you can do at the beginning, just to make the breath very interesting. And as soon as you've done one or two cycles, please let the counting go and just watch the breath. If that doesn't work, or if you're not really into counting, what you can do is say words with the breath. These are what they call the mantra meditation. And it used to be in Thailand, they would watch the breath saying on the in-breath, Buddha, on the out-breath, Dho, Buddha, Buddha, along with the breath. And that worked for people in Thailand because that was an important word. They had an emotional connection with it. And they found a lot of success with that. But after a while, you had to let go of all the words and just watch the breath. That was just to get you going, to get it interesting. But when we came to Australia and teaching Westerners who had no sort of idea of what the Buddha meant and just the power of that term, it was just too difficult. So I had to start messing around with other mantras for Westerners. And for a long time I used this mantra, which was quite successful, but I found another better one later on. When you breathe in, you say to yourself, instead of Buddha and out, Tho, breathing in, say to yourself, shut. Breathing out, up. Shut up. Shut up. And for some people it worked, because after a while of telling yourself to shut up for 5 minutes, actually you might actually do it for a change. Now, not mean the outside, the inside. Shut up, but it was a bit harsh. And after the joke wore off, it became boring again. So the next one which I use usually these days, is when you're breathing in, to say to yourself the word, breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Now, for many of you, your main language, your first language is English. So please use your natural language, because that will have more power for you. And when you do breathe in with the word peace in your first language, when you do breathe in, you don't just look at the word. You remember what it means. What is peace for you? And as you're breathing in, that's what you bring into your body and mind. Breathing in peace. You imagine peace, however it is for you. Now fill out the details. Feel the peace. Breathing in peace. And getting all this incredible, beautiful peace inside your body and mind. And breathe out, let go. Every one of you has got some traumas, some fears, anxieties, problems, health issues or whatever. So whatever it is you want to let go of. Maybe, you know, you've got a cancer or you're recovering from indigestion or whatever. You know, you just breathe out indigestion. Breathe in peace. Oh, that feels good. And breathe out, you know, husband. Or whatever it is. Whatever is painful, difficult for you, you know, breathe that out. Breathe out boss at work. You know, and then you can actually make it really interesting. And what you're doing is all the problems, the difficulties, the heaviness of your life, you're breathing it out. And that is really good fun. If any of you ever do get diseases like cancer, you know, instead of peeing, breathe in health, breathe in energy, breathe in life, and breathe out toxins, cancers, whatever. It becomes really important for you. That's easy to do. And after a while, if you just stay with the words, after a while you get bored. But if you give meaning to the words, you know, peace, health, life, and you breathe that in, that really works. And if you breathe out all this negativity or whatever, pain, sickness, breathe that out. And imagine what it is. If you've got cancer, imagine all these cancer cells coming out of your nose and going out. And don't worry that in this hall other people are going to breathe that in. Don't worry, it's all sanitized and before it gets into somebody else's nose. So you're breathing in beautiful stuff and breathing out sort of the rotten stuff. And that makes the breath meditation, again, very interesting. It's alive, it's purposeful. And then you can really get into it. Not only is it purposeful, but also because you're breathing in peace, you start to get to feel what this peace truly is. And the peace comes into your head and into your body. You feel peaceful. And all the negativity, the obstructions, the hindrances, the defilements, you're breathing all that out. So you imagine that being free of all that. Which means that after a few minutes, if you do it properly, you feel so peaceful and so free of all these worries and concerns which you've been carrying around for such a long time. And you feel good, you feel peaceful. And then you don't need to say anything anymore. The mind is peaceful enough, energized enough, used to the breath enough, you can let go of all the words and just watch the peaceful breath. The breath going in and the breath going out. And it is a very peaceful thing to watch because it's a natural breath. Sometimes that we look for similes to describe these, and the greatest similes, you know, I don't know if you've done this, but I used to go to the beach. And just, you know, because it was in England, you never get in the water, it was freezing. But you'd actually watch the waves. You know, the waves come in, the waves go out. And it was so tranquilizing. Just because these little waves, these ripples coming up the beach, they come in, and then you just go out again with a swoosh of the waves coming in. And you sit there watching that for hours. Just feeling so peaceful, nothing to do. There was enough to satisfy the mind, as regular and as peaceful, to calm the mind. And so you can watch that so peaceful, letting go of all of your past and all the future, and just relaxing and just being. And the nice thing about watching waves on the ocean is you can't control them. They're going to come in and go out according to their own natural pace. And after a while you realize that's the same with your breath. You can't control it. The body will decide how much air it needs and how much it needs to expel. It's a natural process. So it's something which you can just watch without getting involved, and it's very pacifying. The other reason why the breath is a very calming, and you know, this is, you know, my take on the psychology of the breath, is that you spent the very earliest part of your life in your mother's womb, noticing just the rise and fall of her breath. As a baby, a fetus rather, you were very aware of your mum and her breathing. And of course, you know, when you were breastfeeding, again, you were on your mother's chest, up and down with the rhythm of her breath, reassuring, comforting, giving you a feeling of safety. I'm pretty sure those very earliest memories of your life make the rhythm of your breath very easy to watch. Comforting, calming. Just an old memory from the first weeks of your life. That's why it is very easy just to get into the feeling of the breath. Comfortable, safe, calming. So after a while, that's what happens. You're just watching the breath go in, go out, go in, go out. Now, if you did that breath meditation too early on this retreat, you would fall asleep. You know, it's calming, but you haven't got enough energy in that knower yet. Which is one of the reasons, you know, please, you know, rest first of all, in the first couple of days of the retreat. I don't like introducing the breath meditation too early. You're not ready for it yet. You start watching the breath, you get so calm, you're asleep. So now maybe it's good enough because you should have enough rest, enough energy, so you can watch the breath without falling asleep. And it gets very calm and still. And hopefully you get to the tipping point of meditation, I keep calling it, when you're watching the breath and it becomes enjoyable. It's just so peaceful just watching this breath. And it's not just a dull peace. It's a beautiful peace. It's delightful. Until you can just think, I can just watch this for hours. And you're totally satisfied. And even you can notice delight and joy with the breath. That will come, you can't make it happen, when you're peaceful enough, the energy is not going into doing anymore. But the energy is allowed to go into the knowing. Literally you can see more of the breath. It's just like the beautiful food or the sunset. You can see more of the sunset after a few days on this retreat. You can see more of the breath, and as you see more, it looks more beautiful. Have you seen all the flowers in the gardens of this retreat center? You know, I'm telling you, they'll get more beautiful as the retreat goes on. And it's not as if the gardener just shines them up in the middle of the night and when you wake up, wow, they're so colorful this morning. It's you are shining your mind up. You're being able to see more. And when you get to that tipping point, you've got enough stillness for the energy of knowing to become strong, for mindfulness to become powerful. Then when you see the flowers, they're gorgeous. Then when you watch the breath, wow, they're so lovely. My stories of the beauty which comes from stillness. The very, very first meditation retreat which I did, it was in Cambridge in 1970, I think. 71. And we, all the students in this Buddhist society, we hired 3 boarding houses. Now, boarding houses is where students and other poor people would put up. And every boarding house, maybe about 7 or 8 rooms in every boarding house, would have, you know, the manager who was also the cook. Now, this was England. 50 years ago now. And you all know, everybody, even if you haven't gone to that country, the one thing the English were not famous for, but infamous for, was their cooking. It used to be just meat and 2 veg. And if it was like a retreat, it was some vegetarian imitation for meat and 2 veg. And all the vegetables, and whatever else it was boiled. Boiled so much that there was no flavor left at all. And that was, you know, English cuisine in the late 60s, early 70s. Now, of all of the places you can get food, maybe in a restaurant they had a little bit of something to make it to taste okay. But of all the cooks in the whole country, the very worst, The ones which could not get a job any other place will be the one who ended up in the very bottom of the pit in the boarding houses for poor students. And I knew that before I signed up on this retreat. And I knew the food is going to be disgusting in this place. And I really, honestly, I really thought to bring some sandwiches or bring something. I'm not quite sure if you've done that, a few biscuits and other stuff which you got secreted in your room. Don't think I don't know about it. No, 8 precepts. It's okay for other people, but, you know, for me, maybe just... Well, it's not really great, it's only a little bit. Middle way, after all. So I really thought of doing that, but, you know, I said, okay, now let's give it a try. And it was surprising that the food in that boarding house, after a couple of days, I really started to enjoy it. Now, I went to one of these colleges which have these professional cooks who could really cook. You know, that was the top of the pile. You know, who'd actually make these big dinners for dignitaries. So I really ate well in the college. And this was, you know, just almost the same. Really tasty food. And I thought it was just my good karma. Just lucky to have got the only boarding house in the whole of the country with someone who could cook. But that wasn't the reason at all. Well, the only reason was my mindfulness was getting so strong. I was really peaceful, and all the energy was going into my mind until my mind became so sensitive, so full of energy, the little remnant, the final little piece of taste which was left in that cabbage after all that boiling, I could actually pick that up. It's just like these dogs who can actually notice the scent of like heroin or anything else. There's one of the people, you know her very well, for those people who come to Nolan Mara, really good person, former vice president. She was coming back from Kuala Lumpur. She got stopped by the dog. And the dog actually smelt cocaine on her. And she asked her, have you been to a nightclub? She said, look, I'm over 60. I don't go to nightclubs anymore. And of course, the customs officer realized, no, you must have actually just brushed past somebody who was carrying some cocaine. And the dog is so sensitive, even if you have never touched the stuff yourself, just brushing past someone in the streets of KL who's got some cocaine, that will actually transfer onto your clothes and the dog will pick it up. It's that sensitive. It's an amazing experience how sensitive dogs are. And that's how sensitive I was. You know, even just, you know, that food which she'd cooked one day actually had some taste and I could still pick it up. And it was delicious. And that really taught me about what happens when the mind becomes very sensitive. You know, this is good food over here, so however much it tasted in the morning, in the first day of this retreat, it gets more delicious. The more mindful you become, the more still you become. And everything else becomes very beautiful. The other experience from that retreat was that my clump of bamboo, which I mentioned in one of my books. We were allowed to go on a walk. I went to the local botanical gardens, which were close by, and I really thought I was going to go for some exercise. But the very first day, my meditation was peaceful enough. At the entrance to the Cambridge Botanical Gardens was a clump of bamboo. And it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And I was just transfixed, and I stood there for a while. And I was smart enough to realize, if I carry on standing still like this, you know, you don't do that in UK, to stand still, staring at a clump of bamboo. Soon someone's going to call the police, and they're going to take me away. You know, because it's not done. I was smart enough to find a bench and sit down. You're allowed to stare from sitting on a bench, but not standing up. So I sat on this bench and stared at that clump of bamboo for about 50 minutes until I had to go back to the house for the continued meditation. And I went back again the next day and the next day and the next day. And for 8 days, I never finished seeing that beautiful clump of bamboo. It was just so sensuous and gorgeous. Imagine seeing a clump of bamboo and just watching it without moving for 8 days. Couldn't believe how beautiful it was. And after the retreat was finished, back to studies, you know, busy social life and everything else, I remember having this free afternoon. I'm going to go and visit my beautiful clump of bamboo. Got on my bicycle, weaving through the Cambridge traffic and got to Botanical Gardens, full of expectations. And what I saw there at the entrance was this really weedy, dry, desiccated, ugly piece of bamboo, because bamboo doesn't grow in that climate. And any beauty had totally vanished. And that shocked me. Where's that beauty gone? Where's that delight? It was just something which you really should have cut down and thrown away. It was a plant in the wrong place. And I realized it was just because my mind had now got tired. It closed up. I didn't have the ability to see delight anymore, because I was tired again. Experiences like that showed me just some of the benefits of meditation. Opens up beauty and happiness where you never expected it. And I can't resist this story, which, you know what's coming now. This is a golden oldie, which is why you're laughing before I even start the story. But it's absolutely true, and I tell it on every retreat because it fits in. Here in Janagro, one of the first retreats we did here, it's been here about 4 or 5 years now. And again, I get into good meditation when I'm teaching you guys. And I was meditating, a really beautiful still meditation, seeing happiness everywhere. Oh, it's just so nice. And, like everybody else, I had to go to the toilet. You know what's coming, don't you? My golden oldie. I had to go to the toilet. So I went to the toilet, just, in the opposite the laundry, in one of the cubicles there. I sat down, I did what they call a number two. And I just happened, as you, many people do, just before you flush the toilet, you have a look to see what you've done. And wow, I just could not believe what was in that bowl. Never in my life before had I seen such a beautiful lump of shit. Now you may not appreciate it. You think it's just one. It's not just one color brown. Look at it. There's all these different shades of brown, and as a color, it's just really rich. These bricks over here, they're washed out, they're dark, they're pastel. But this is a rich colour brown. And just the way it's all put together, just these little balls all stuck together, as if it was some sculpture by some great Rodin, or even Michelangelo would be proud to put it together that way. And then I hadn't even got onto the aroma, the perfume, which was, it's really full. Full and just fills all your brain up, and it was, I must have mentioned also, because there's always a little bit of mucus or something on the outside, it carries the water and it actually sparkles like a jewel. There I was in a toilet cubicle going, wow, that's incredible, that's so amazing. You've heard it before, but it's great to hear again, isn't it? And it was, honestly, 100% straight up, if I hadn't been a monk, I would not have been able to let it go. Because as a monk, I trained myself to let beautiful things go. Press the button and watch this most beautiful thing in the world just go down the toilet hole. But that was a great sacrifice. You may laugh, and I think many of you may be able to appreciate that story. But that's what happened. If a piece of shit looks so beautiful, imagine what the breath looks like. Imagine you go outside and you see a little flower, then it blows you away. Wow. If that ever happens and you see someone, and they've gone outside and just watching a flower, standing there transfixed, you know what they're doing. Leave them alone. They're enjoying themselves immensely. They're seeing depth into that flower which they've never seen before. It's not unusual for people to do that. I always remember that quote from William Blake. It's in one of his great poems. To see a world. No, to see a world in a grain of sand. A heaven in a wild flower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand.
an eternity in an hour. There's a 17th century English mystic poet, to see a world in a grain of sand. Is that any grain of sand? It's nothing. No, when you get mindful and you really sort of open up, wow, a tiny grain of sand, it's incredible what's going on in there. See a heaven in a while. It's not just beautiful, this is heaven. You look at that for hours and you're just so much beauty in there. It's a heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand. Wow, no boundaries anymore. An eternity in an hour. I often say that that was a problem of rhyming. If a moment rhymed with flower, he would have said, see, eternity in a moment. Timelessness. That's what it meant. And that's what you do in meditation. That's what happens. So as you're watching the breath, after a while, it turns into beautiful. And you're incredible. Well, you never thought you'd see anything really interesting. You're just watching there. Wow, this breath is lovely. You're just watching the breath go in and go out. It's not concentration anymore. You don't force the mind. You just can't help it. I wasn't trying to concentrate on that piece of shit in the toilet bowl. Come on, Ajahn Brahm, concentrate. You can't do that. It just happens naturally. Things become beautiful because your mind has become still. And I call that a tipping point in meditation, because from there on it's like a snowball effect. You can't stop it. Because the breath starts to look delightful, so beautiful watching this breath, means you don't have to put any effort in. There's no trying, there's no doing. You just stay with this breath, which means more energy goes into the knowing. The mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger the less you do. And because it's becoming happy, you don't have to do anything. You're enjoying yourself. And your mindfulness gets incredibly strong. So you start to see the very beginning of an in-breath. The time when the in-breath is born out of nothing. The big bang of breathing. From nothing, you get this beautiful breath and it expands the inflationary universe. And it goes into the height of breathing in and then fades away again into nothing. Wow. And then there's the great pause, the intermediate state, the antarabhava, where the breath has finished and no new breath has arisen yet. Still pregnant, waiting for life. And then an out-breath begins, reaches its peak as you're breathing out, and then fades away again. Wow. And you see all of that. And it blows your mind. It's incredible. This thing which you've taken for granted ever since you were born. This breath, which many ancient traditions equated with life force. You know, in Pali, the word for breath is prana, anapana, sati, breath. The word for life or animals is prana atipata, the first precept, not to destroy, prana or life. In Hinduism, prana, pranayama, bringing up energy into the body, life force, that's the same as breath. And in Latin, the word for breath in Latin, you know what that is? Animalis. That is what breath means in Latin. The same word for animals. In cultures, I don't know what in Norwegian is, but in so many cultures, the word for breath and life are just so close together. So don't underestimate this breath. This is incredible once you really start getting mindful. Allow it to open up and see what's actually in there. And then imagine what you're doing. You're sitting here just watching the breath go in. Wow, this is incredible. Full of happiness. Full of incredible peace. Then you're getting into these beautiful states of meditation. And you come out afterwards and you've got this big smile on your face. Thank you. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. You've got this big smile on your face. And also, you know, that people think you've been on some sort of drugs. One of the ladies who came here a couple of years ago, when she went back to Sydney, her boss asked her, said, what did they give you in this Jhana Grove centre? Whatever it was, can you please bring me back some next time? because the happiness was palpable. So here you go into this beautiful birth, you're having a good time. When it gets to insight, becoming enlightened and all that sort of stuff, we'll explain that, how that works later on, but the joy and happiness in meditation is crucial. Please enjoy this meditation. Don't think there must be something wrong, I'm enjoying this, because in most religions you're supposed to suffer, you know, in order to get anywhere. You know, someone said the Puritan part of Christianity, they said the definition of Puritanism is this is some great philosopher a long time ago, the definition of the Puritan strand of Christianity is the fear that somewhere, someone is being happy. It was just so afraid of happiness. And this is a bit of a problem here. I just noticed the present Pope was telling all his priests, look, bring joy back into religion for goodness sake. Otherwise people will just leave. And certainly in meditation, please, that when that happiness comes, let it come, celebrate it. It is supposed to happen in Buddhism. This is not a new teaching, it's an old teaching. Look at the text and say, after a while you start to develop this piti sukha, this bliss and happiness. The Buddha says specifically, meditators, do not be afraid of that happiness. Welcome it, develop it, make much of it. And even I love telling the story. There's two other stories. There's one story, the king, Pasenadi, one of the Buddha's chief disciples. He went to see the Buddha in the Jetavana monastery, the Jeta Grove. And after respecting the Buddha asked him, why, king, do you like coming to this monastery so much? And the king answered, because when I come to this monastery, the monks are always happy and smiling. That's why I like coming. Would you like to go to a monastery where all the nuns are miserable? They're not. That's why people go there. Of course you don't want to go to miserable places. And the Buddha replied, yes, great king, that is what you can expect when people are meditating properly and getting insights. They should get happier and happier. And that's a very telling statement from the Buddha. This is what happens. It's natural. When people are meditating, you will get happier and happier and happier if you're meditating properly. So by the end of this retreat, I expect your smiles to get bigger and bigger and bigger. That will tell me much more about your meditation than anything else. All those interviews where you tell me what you're experiencing, what you're doing, all those words, they count for very little with me. But your smile will tell me much more about what's really going on. You can't resist it. It's happy. And then when that occurs, you're having a wonderful time. You don't have to worry about getting up early in the morning. You can't wait to get up. Yes! More bliss. And then you meditate here, and you're sitting here with a big smile on your face. And thank you. And shut up. A big smile on your face. Enjoy everything. And, you know, even when I start talking, the 8 o'clock talk, carry on meditating. Don't have to listen to me. You know, listen to the joy and the bliss inside you, but that's much more important. You catch up on the talks later on. It comes to lunchtime, and I really enjoy this. When it comes to lunchtime, and people are still sitting here. 11 o'clock, and they're still sitting here enjoying themselves. Now, imagine that you're not going to eat in the afternoon or evening. The lunchtime, 11 o'clock, is your last meal. Can you give that up? If you had to give that up, you must be really enjoying yourself in your meditation. That's what people do. You see there, they know they're going to miss lunch. But they'd rather enjoy this bliss of meditation than go and have lunch. That's what happiness is. I can eat another day, but this bliss is just so nice. There's no way I'm going to give it up. Now that's what happens when you start watching the breath. So it starts off, you're making it happen, you're breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. That might be interesting, but after a while that's how it develops. The less you do, the less you react, the less you control, the more the energy
is not going into doing things anymore, it's going into knowing things. You wake up, you see more, everything becomes more delightful, the food tastes better, you don't need to sleep so much because you've got more energy, and even your bed feels just so comfortable. Everything, it gets enhanced. So when you do watch the breathing, it's so easy to see, so delightful, and you're taking off. And that's only the start of the bliss. You ain't seen nothing yet. And I'll tell some of the other blisses later on. But that's enough for now. So enjoy! And again, if you see someone in... Oh, please, especially in the ladies' toilets, because people... If you're out in the ladies' toilet and you've got a good meditation, please don't look in the bowl, otherwise you'll be in there for hours. And always the ladies need more time in the toilets. So the guys can do that okay, because, you know, we don't need the toilet so much. But the girls, please, well, don't look in the toilet bowl if you had a good meditation, otherwise you're not going to be out for an hour. And if you... So anyway, have a wonderful meditation this morning. We have some interviews now. And happy blissing out. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. That's really good stretching. There's a lot of delight. Very good. Very good. And if you want to bow after you leave here, someone told me, where was it? It was a psychologist. I saw it in town. They said that they do all this research into neuroscience, and they say every time you bow your head, nitrous oxide is secreted somewhere, which is like a high. And so every time you bow your head, it's actually a high gets into your brain. So if you're feeling very depressed, bow, 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 until you get enough of a hit of nitrous oxide, you feel happy.